how much information would you say is needed, and is there too much information you can provide?
I don't know. I don't think you can provide them too much information. You know, if you are, they'll let you know. They'll only take what's needed. But generally speaking, the mistake I usually see made is that the business owner is trying to control the flow of information too much and ends up making the auditor suspicious, and that's the last thing you want to do. If they think you're hiding something, you know, the provisions of the policy give them very broad authority to pretty much look at almost any document they think might be pertinent to figuring out your premium. So that means if push comes to shove, they can insist on seeing even personal tax returns if they think that might hide information. So you don't want to make these guys suspicious. You want to give them what they need so they can come in, do their audit, and get out.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And that leads us to a point. When your auditor does come, is he the enemy or is he the friend? I mean, how do you treat the auditor? What would you recommend?
In terms of the way you interact with the auditor, you want to have a very nice, cordial, professional relationship. Whatever information, whatever documents the auditor wants, you want to provide to them, because these auditors right now, they are getting a lot of pressure from the insurance industry to be on the lookout for what they consider to be fraud on the part of employers. And right now, the big trend is they are seeking criminal prosecutions of employers that they feel have been trying to pull a fast one over on them. So the last thing you want to do is to make one of these guys suspicious or to feel like you're not being cooperative, because then they'll bring in their special investigative units if they think there's a lot of premium being hidden, and they will turn everything upside down and make this into a much bigger project than it needs to be.
Well, I don't think anybody looks forward to that type of investigation.
Nope.
I'll tell you that. You're talking about things like they could even get into your timesheets and records and job descriptions, things that really
absolutely
kind of drive it and make sure that things are being done right. That's scary, Ed.
Yep. So, I mean, last year I was over at the National Convention for Insurance Premium Auditors, and I was at one session being run by these lawyers from out in California who do a lot of work for insurance companies investigating what they think is fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And they were running this session like a tent revival meeting. They're telling these auditors, if you see this and this and this, they're a crook. If you see this and this and that, they're a crook. And one of the auditors pipes up and says, wait a minute, I can conceive of circumstances where this could happen and it would just be an honest mistake. And the lawyers are there going, no, you are way too naive. If you see this, they're a crook. So these guys are getting it beaten to their heads that if they see something that doesn't feel right or doesn't smell right, they're now being trained to be very, very vigilant and to assume that someone's trying to pull a fast one on them.
To be aggressive. Wow,
that is.
You know what? You're scaring me, Ed. that's crazy stuff to think that people. But you know what? I can. The way things are. Let's face it. Even with contractors, say the way that we sell compared to the way we sold 20 years ago, it's a different way. And
that's right. Once upon a time, it was viewed as. Just, at least some guys, you know, some business owners, some contracts would view it as, this is just a tough negotiation. I'm not going to give this guy any more than I absolutely have to. It's his job to figure it out, and if he doesn't, that's tough. And it's just good business to try and play this negotiation tough.
Right.
I don't think that's such a good idea anymore.
Yeah, because if he doesn't have all the information, what's he going to do to get the number, right?
He's going to come up with a number, and if they don't have the information they need to come up with a solid number, they will come up with a number based on their assumptions using worst-case scenario type formats. You don't want to see the number they come up with when they do that.
A contractor's worst-case scenario? I think I've lived a few of those, but I don't think we want the auditors taking a guess based on that. That's for sure. Yeah. Wow. That's some great stuff. Remember, if any of you listeners want to ask any questions, this is a great opportunity to get all your questions answered by Ed Priz. Please email them to us during the seminar right now at info@contractorselling.com. Now, how closely should somebody work with the auditor? So here's the person at your building, the man or woman is going digging through your records or whatnot. What kind of information what kind of talk should you have or chat, or should you just leave them alone? What should you do?
I think you want to say, okay, look, just help me help you do your job. Tell me exactly what documents. In fact, usually they will send you something in advance, something in writing, saying, look, we're going to be on such and such a day. Please try and have available these records. So, I mean, what you want to have available, what they want to be able to confirm is they want to figure out what was your actual payroll for the policy period. If you run overtime, if that's a significant issue for you, you want to make sure that your records allow them to break out the premium portion of the overtime. Because in most states, the premium portion of payroll, you know, of the overtime pay, that gets equalized back down to straight time. So they knock out that premium portion if your records allow them to figure out what the premium portion was without having to you know, spend days at it. So you want to review your payroll records in advance and make sure that it breaks that out in such a way that the auditor can see relatively easily, oh, here's what the overtime was, here's how I can figure out what the premium portion was, and they can do that for you. Because otherwise, if the records don't let them break it out, they're just going to charge you the full payroll.
Wow. That's a great piece of advice. And that leads to me to understanding that not just assuming you might get an audit, but really preparing for this ahead of time and having the information. If you get that phone call saying I'm coming over to do the audit next week, it's important to take enough time to make sure that that type of information is being prepared correctly. And I think that's where your book is. Believe me, I'm not selling your book because I just think it's one of the best things I've ever read for contractors and any small business actually that can pay high premiums or it's exposed to high premiums, because I think that's like the preparation is important. How soon in advance should people prepare for an audit? I mean, should you assume you're going to get one, and how far in advance do you think you should start thinking about this?
If your premium size is over, If you're in the premium range, if you're paying $25,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year for workers' comp on up, anything in that range, you're likely to be audited. So then you want to start doing at least some preparation in advance. You want to look at your payroll, see how your payroll records are set up, make sure the auditor can easily figure out things like the overtime. You also want to make sure that your records clearly keep track of when your people are doing different kinds of work. Because for a lot of folks in construction type business, there may be more than one classification that applies to the different kinds of work your people do. But if your payroll records don't keep track by specific hours of how much time people are spending doing one kind of work and how much time they're spending doing a different kind of work, if the records don't spell that out, the auditor isn't allowed to use estimates. So you can't come in and say, 25% of the time they're doing this and the rest they're doing – that's not good. The records have to keep track by hours. Otherwise, everything gets thrown to the most expensive class.
Wow. So that's important that when you're creating timesheets that these job duties are being kind of followed religiously and then classified in advance, so this way the auditor doesn't do the work. Because I kind of look at it like you look at it, that auditors are basically lazy, and if you make it easy for them, they'll take the path of least resistance.
They're under a lot of time pressure by the insurance companies to get in and get out. So to whatever extent you can make it nice and easy for them, if you do a little bit of homework, they're going to be inclined to accept that. The other thing you got to be careful about, sometimes there's an issue, is that sometimes companies will have somewhat unorthodox methods of paying additional pay, and you got to be careful because they'll adjust back premium portions of overtime back down to straight time, but that's really the only adjustment to payroll that the rules allow in most states. So if you're doing something else, if you're working out any other kind of bonus pay arrangement where you're doing something else to pay them that isn't strictly an overtime basis,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to get adjusted. So you might want to rethink any bonus type thing you have that's raising your payroll costs without it being a reflection of additional hours, because the only one under the rules that gets adjusted is overtime pay. They pick up vacation pay, they pick up pay for sick time, all kinds of stuff like that. So it doesn't matter if the person wasn't actually at work while he's on vacation, that pay gets picked up. Bonuses get picked up just the same as any other kind of pay. There's very few specific exceptions where bonuses might not be picked up. Things like if you're giving them a bonus for like a scientific discovery or a patent or something like that. But otherwise, bonuses get picked up just like any other kind of pay.
Wow. That's great advice to think about that. I'm going to return to you with a question on that. Don't forget to remind me about that subject. But I want to ask one more question just in terms of workman's comp and exposure here. There's two things that I want to talk about just briefly. I mean, I could probably stand in line with 3 hours, but I'll try to keep this down to a reasonable time length for you. And don't forget the book that Ed has is, Ed, go ahead and repeat the title of the book.
It's called The Ultimate Guide to Workers' Compensation Insurance. It's published by Entrepreneur Press, the same folks that publish Entrepreneur Magazine. And the other plug I'll get in if I can, too, is but we have a website out there that has a lot of information about these kinds of subjects, and that's at cutcomp.com.
Yeah.
So folks might want to take a look at that, because in addition to having the usual propaganda about how wonderful and brilliant we are here, it also has a lot of information about the details of how premiums are computed and has some information on state by state, stuff like that. So they might find something useful there as well.
Well, yeah, I would say that your website is one of the few that actually does provide information, so good for you. you know what? Is it best that here's a good one. I have a couple tricky slippery slopes that I see people make mistakes on that I've seen disaster stories. Touch on these for me. One where an employer were to pay for an employee's claim through a company and not turn it into the insurance company. Just like somebody gets hurt at work, and then the employer says, you know what? I don't want my comp to raise. So let me go ahead and just take care of this off to the side, and I'll send you to the chiropractor and take care of that back injury.
Yep. It's usually a bad idea for a couple of reasons. Number one, every once in a while, one of those little minor claims will get complicated and turn into a big, expensive claim. And if you haven't turned it into your insurance company on a timely basis, they can come back and say, sorry, you didn't let us know within the required time frame. This one's all yours. The other thing to keep in mind is that most states, not all, but most states use the NCCI as their system for workers' comp, including for computing the experience mods. And in most states with the NCCI mod system nowadays, they discount what they call medical-only claims. So a claim where there's no lost time, where it's only for medical-only payments, they discount it by 70% when they compute the experience mod. So that these little small claims, they're not driving up your mod so much anymore the way they once did under the formula. Now, not every state uses that formula, but most of the NCCI states have approved it, maybe all of them by now. So, you really don't want to be paying those little medical-only claims yourself because, number one, it can come back to bite you if the claim gets complicated and expensive, and two, it's really not driving up your insurance costs all that much.
You know, one of the funny issues is that I didn't realize that there was even a deductible situation on workman's comp. All the agents I ever sold me comp just said, here it is, we cover everything from A to Z, which I think they may think I want to hear that. However, I would say that I would probably pay out of pocket probably $3,000 if I had to, rather than see my comp premium go up. I mean, I don't think a lot of contractors are aware that there is actually higher deductibles available for workers' comp, right?
And they come in two flavors. A number of states in the last decade or so have approved what they call small deductible plans, whereas you can take a policy with a small deductible of anywhere from $100 on up to maybe $1,000, and you'll get a premium credit on when they compute the premium for that. The other flavor is large deductibles, and these are really only offered for companies that are paying a couple $100,000 a year in workers' comp. But once you're up into that range, you may well be seeing one of these proposals because they're being offered more and more. Large deductible policies have deductibles that on the low end might be $25,000 per claim. More commonly, the low end is really $100,000 on up to maybe $1 million per claim for really big companies.
Mm-hmm.
So under those kinds of plans, they offer a lot of the benefits of being self-insured in that if your claims are low, you're going to save an awful lot of money. But you really have to be pretty confident of what your losses are going to be like. You have to have your loss situation under control for those to really be beneficial. The problem, of course, even for a lot of larger companies is in the voluntary market, they're not given a choice. A lot of times the insurance companies will say, the only way we want to write your insurance is on a large deductible, because on the large deductible plan, the insurance company is getting their money. If the losses are low, that's great. They're still getting their money. And if losses are through the roof, you're paying them for whatever those losses are.
Right, right. So it's kind of best of both worlds.
For their point of view, yes.
Mm-hmm.
It can offer savings to the employer if your losses are low, but if your losses aren't so low, you can end up costing you a lot more than the traditional kind of policy would have.
That's very interesting. Now, What is it that, how important is that? You mentioned before the business type is important. The auditor knows your business type.
Mm-hmm.
And also the location. I heard a contractor I know in New York that he was classified as he's working downtown New York City as opposed to working in the suburbs
New York has that feature to it. Most other places don't. But New York does, where the rates for working in the immediate downtown area are higher rate. And if you're working outside that, it's a different set of rate. But that's really a unique rating situation to New York.
Okay. Good. I want to clarify that because that's something that I heard. And I was like, wow, I didn't even think of looking at that. You know, there's always some kind of curveball. You get from this type of thing, you know. So I'm glad you're here to answer for all of us.
But most other states aren't. For most other states, the rates are. I mean, almost every state has set up some kind of rate competition. So nowadays, the rates from insurance company A will be slightly different from insurance company B. But the rate differential usually isn't huge between the two companies, at least not in their manual rates. The real difference in their premiums will come in these discretionary credits, where one insurance company might offer a 25% discount off the manual premium through what they call scheduled credits, and another company, one company will offer no credits, another company might offer 50% credit if it's a really soft market.
Wow, that's some great stuff. I tell you what, I'm going to go ahead and I made a little special book report about your book, but you know, about some of the common mistakes that are made during audits. I call them the 16 deadly mistakes that you can make during audit. I'll tell you what, the first five people who email me right now and put the subject line "send Ed's report," I'll go ahead and give you that report for free. So go ahead and anybody who's listening right now, go ahead and put the subject line "send Ed's report." Send it to info@contractorselling.com, and I'll send you a little. It's about a 5-page report. Ed, why don't you just touch briefly without reading the entire book, because there's a lot of mistakes that are made as common mistakes of audits. Why don't you just touch briefly on some of the common mistakes that are made during audits?
Especially in the construction or you know, any contract-related business, you want to make sure that what they call the allocation of payroll is right. That is, even if all the classifications on the policy are right, you want to make sure that they're putting different people in the right class. So, again, it gets back to, do they understand what this group of people does or does this department do? Another common mistake is if you're using any subcontractors or independent contractors who have their own insurance, in most states, if they don't have their own insurance, your insurance company is going to charge you just as if they were your own employees. But if they have their own insurance, you can avoid that as long as you've got a certificate of insurance showing that they had their own coverage. So for any independent guys who use any subcontractors, if they're providing their own workers' comp, make sure they send you in a certificate of insurance and you have it on file so the auditor can see it. Because he'll spot those independent contractors, and as long as you can show him a certificate of insurance, he's not going to charge you for them.
I get it. Now, when it comes to having audits done and if you suspect you have an incorrect audit, how far back can a contractor go to get some kind of relief on audits that you suspect? Now, knowing some of this information, I'm sure a lot of people are digging through their files. How far back can somebody go?
I mean, generally, in most states, the policy says the insurance company can come back and change things for up to 3 years after the policy ends. So most state departments of insurance would recognize a reciprocal right on the part of the policyholder to go back at least into three prior policies and get stuff fixed. Now, here in Illinois, where I'm based, actually, thanks to a law that actually I consulted on many years ago when it was drafted, we've got a statute in Illinois that says if you can document that the insurance company overcharged you on workers' comp because of some technical mistake, you can get a refund going all the way back to 1984. Now, Illinois is the only state I know of that has a law like that, and even with that law, you have to be able to document it, and you have to be able to find out, God, who was my insurance company way back when, and so it's not always easy. But we have, upon occasion, been able to negotiate refunds for companies going back, you know, 10, 15 years sometimes. Say an insurance company's used the wrong classification form for all those years.
That's amazing. One last question. This is about just the consumer. Let's face it, contractors pay a lot of money for workers' comp insurance. What is the downside for the consumer if they hire somebody who does not have workers' comp insurance?
Oh, well, I mean, if you, as a say a homeowner, you hire someone to do some work around your house, and he doesn't have workers' comp and gets injured on the job, you're going to be liable for it because you're the employer. and your homeowner's policy won't respond to workers' comp. Basically, no other policy really will pay a workers' comp claim except a workers' comp policy.
Hmm.
So that's why it's really in your interest when you're hiring someone to make sure they have workers' comp coverage. What sometimes gets tricky, even when it comes to independent, you know, using independents or subcontractors, is that a lot of states will say if you're a sole proprietor, you don't have to buy workers' comp on yourself. But let's say as a homeowner, you want to hire that person. He says, the state says, I don't have to have it. But if he gets hurt, he can still make a claim against you in most states. So whenever you're hiring someone, either as an individual basis or whether you're, you know, through your company as an independent or a sub, even if the state says you don't, as a sole proprietor, you don't have to buy it, you as the person hiring them can say, yeah, but I don't hire people unless they have workers' comp. You, when you're hiring someone, you can say as a condition of employment, I want you to buy a workers' comp policy. Because even if the state doesn't require it, the sole proprietor can still voluntarily choose to get workers' compensation.
I get it. Well, great. I think that's all the time we have right now. I tell you, I want to say thanks for participating and taking the time to help our listeners. And I want to get to just – I might have a few email questions. You got a few seconds to answer those? Sure, okay. The questions I have here, I've got my emails here. I have a little thing that people pop up, a little pop-up that I get my emails with for the seminar here. We have one of the questions is, I got it from Mike from Anytime Plumbing in San Diego. Wants to know, now where he heard the title of the book now, but where exactly can you get the book?
You know, the best place I found is Amazon. They seem to have the cheapest price for it I've seen anywhere,
mm-hmm.
And they have it readily available. In most bookstores I've gone to, they don't carry it in stock. They can special order it for you, you know, at a Barnes & Noble or whatever, but you might have to wait a week or so. But you can order it right from Amazon or from some of the other online guys, too, I think, like Barnes & Noble.
Okay, well, let's see what we have here. How is the bonus pay. Let's go back to that bonus pay issue. So when it comes to bonus pay, or if a lot of people who work under the kind of thing that we do, a lot of sales-oriented type contractors, do pay performance bonuses or bonuses based on just sales performance. And like if somebody hits a certain level, they'll
mm-hmm.
go ahead and throw them some extra money because they were more profitable. Is there anything that can be done to avoid paying in a way that doesn't increase the comp? You want to call exposure?
There really isn't. They draft these rules very, very broadly and very carefully because they really don't want someone coming up with a compensation method that skirts the rules. So
yeah.
The rules are very, very specific. There are only very narrow exceptions to that, and I've actually got those posted somewhere on my website as well. But for most kinds of businesses, unless you know, you might pay if you pay a bonus for a scientific discovery. I don't know how many folks in the construction business are doing that.
I see. Scientific discovery, huh?
Yeah, or patents or things like that. But otherwise, almost any kind of bonus is going to be picked up as payroll.
Hmm. All right. Well, I just wanted to say thanks to our guest, Ed Priz, who is author of the book, The Ultimate Guide to Workers' Compensation Insurance, Secrets to Cutting Your Workers' Comp Costs. And I want to tell everybody, don't forget to... if you want to learn more about some of Ed's stuff, if you're a member, we have posted the special report, the 16 Deadly Mistakes of Workers' Comp Audits that you can download right at our site. And that will also give – inside that report, Ed, I've included all your contact information and both your mailing address and your email address and your website and everything there.
That's great because we always let people know, you know, if you have a specific question or something, just – so email is usually the best way. But if you have a question, send it to us. It might take us a day or two to research it and get an answer out to you, but we're always glad to take a look and see if we can answer any questions that folks send to us.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll go ahead and get the ball rolling. I have a copy of your book here. I'll go ahead and I'll buy another copy for myself. And I'll go ahead and give this one away to the first person who emails us, I want Ed's book right now. I'll go ahead and give that book away to the first person who sends an email to us saying, I want Ed's book on workers' comp, or just say, I want Ed's book, and I will go ahead and give that copy to the first person who emails that to us. Is that generous, Ed?
That's very generous.
All right. Well, thanks. I appreciate you. I appreciate you being so generous with your time. And it's not very many people I like in the insurance business or the insurance industry. And I tell you what, you've made me a believer. Now, when somebody, if somebody were to think about using your services as opposed, because I know a lot of contractors kind of do-it-yourselfers type of thing, And the first thing I'll think is they hear all this stuff and they're like, you know, I could probably do this myself. Why should I share any money with Ed? Let me ask you a question. When should somebody consider using your services, or how can I tell if I'm out there talking to thousands of contractors? How can I tell if somebody's a good fit for you, and whether it's a balance between not wasting your time with something that's not there? Or
we try not to screen things too much on the front end, because you never know what you're going to find until you take a look at it. So, I mean, generally speaking, we would suggest. We prefer to work with folks who are paying minimum in most states, maybe $40,000 or $50,000 a year for workers' comp, at least for us to work on a contingent fee basis to look at something. We're also available to work on an hourly rate basis. And so, you know, in that case, if someone's even a smaller premium size, but they've got something they really want us to have someone take a look at, we're always available to work on an hourly rate basis. And surprisingly, I would say, you know, it usually doesn't take a huge amount of hours to double check something or review something and see if there's a problem there or not. So it's not like, even on the hourly basis, it's not like it's usually going to run up a huge bill just to check things and see if there's anything that needs to be pursued.
Well, Ed, I want to thank you once again for stopping by and taking the time to help our listeners. And don't forget, if you want to learn more about Ed's book, you can go to cutcomp.com. And if you want to learn more about contractorselling.com, well, you can just go to that address I just gave you, contractorselling.com. And if you want to send your techs or salespeople to a Total Immersion Summit, you can also go to Total Immersion Training by going to the www.contractorselling.com website and looking at the right-hand nav panel, and you'll see a little book, and you can click on that, and it'll take you right to this place where you can sign up for our training. I want to thank all of our listeners for dropping by, and don't forget that if you haven't already signed up for membership at contractorselling.com, please go to the site and join us now. The only regret you will have is if you join us too late or not at all. Again, this is Joe Crocera signing off and saying to all of you, thank you and good night. All right, Ed.
All right, great. Well, thanks very much, Joe.
Well, thanks a lot, buddy. I really appreciate this, and it's going to be a winner. I'll go ahead and send you you know, the MP3 file so you have it for your keepsake. You can use it in your, if you want to use it for yourself, you're welcome to go ahead and use it. And I learned a lot myself from this evening, and thanks a lot for doing this.
I appreciate the chance you gave me to get our story out a little bit. We're always glad to do that.
Well, thank you.
All right, take care.
Have a nice one.
You too.